We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Thank you, Roger. 306 at the Voice of St. Louis. Every once in a while, you'll hear, it's a great feature, by the way, and a great podcast, PNC C-Speak, online. You can find it at KMOX.com. And Mike Scully, who's the local VP, and we draw in someone who is really interesting, usually to talk about something that is technology-related or just something where we can give, I think the goal is to give people in the C-suite some great advice, some motivation, some inspiration. It really is a great feature, and you can hear segments during TIAM. I bring it up because I did one, I don't even know if this one is on the air or on the podcast yet, with a woman named Amanda Agati, who is the Managing Director and Chief Investment Strategist for PNC Financial Services Group. And we were doing this and recording it last week, and Amanda's been on the show before after I did another C-Speak with her, talking about some of the things that they look at when it comes to guiding investors through this election. And they don't look at polls at all, but they look at something else, and she'll tell us about it at 3:20 this afternoon. I wanted to spend a little time with our good buddy Kevin Wheeler this afternoon about the World Series, and then just this nonsense that Kevin... This I don't even want to say this, that Yachty is a free agent right now. It's painful to say that. I hope that's very temporary. I know that This is a procedural thing to a certain extent, but I don't like to say that, right? So I hope this doesn't last long.
No, I mean, look, we don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, you're right. It is procedural in the sense that unless they were going to pay him 80% or more of what he made last year, then he had to go to free agency to take less than that, right? So he made $20 million last year. If they were willing, if there was a chance he was going to make $16 million a year starting in 2021, well, he could have just re-signed without going into free agency. But if he's going to go for less than that, or if he just wants to see what else is out there, this was obviously going to happen. So, yeah, first time he's been in the league since the 2004 season. So obviously been a long run for him with the Cardinals, 17 years so far. And weird, you're right, weird to see him listed as a free agent going into the offseason.
And Adam Wainwright also hitting free agency. I know that you just sent me a message that said, I guess, Mozeliak's going to hold a news conference this afternoon. Are we expecting to hear some news related to these two things? And then they have to do something with Colton Wong, right?
Right. So I don't know if there's going to be anything about – we don't know exactly what it is. We just got a notification from the team that there's going to be a press conference at 4:30 on Zoom with John Mozeliak. So we'll be tuning in to see what that's going to be. But you've got these two guys hitting free agency. The bigger, the more pressing news today or item today is they have to decide by tonight on Colton Wong's team option. So the team has the option to bring him back for $12.5 million for next year or pay him a $1 million buyout and let him go into free agency. So it could have something to do with that. Or it could be a contract extension that makes the picking up of the option moot. So we'll see, but it could be any number of things. My bet is some of it's going to have to do with Colton Wong since that's facing a deadline today.
All right, what did you think of everything that happened last night? I admitted to Steve Futterman earlier this afternoon that I fell asleep. I was so tired. I didn't get back from Vegas until early yesterday morning. I've watched so much baseball, Kevin. It pained me last night. I told Becky, I'm like, I just can't stay up for this. I saw, I guess, the first four innings, but things kind of got weird with the Justin Turner stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's crazy that, you know, the Dodgers winning the World Series for the first time since 1988, you know, the Rays being there, the fact that it was a brilliant series, the fact that they had gone nearly two full months without a COVID test, all of these things could have been a story. And then in the middle of the game, Justin Turner of the Dodgers is removed without an explanation. We find out later he had tested, we didn't find out until after the game that he had tested positive for COVID They didn't find out that second confirmation test until the game had, you know, until we're midway through the game, which is when he was pulled. And then after the Dodgers won, he went back out on the field and celebrated with everybody, despite being asked to isolate himself, despite being asked to quarantine because of the positive test. He went right out there and just did his thing, sometimes with a mask on, sometimes not. And now that's the big story. And nothing screams 2020, Mark, like, you know, a great World Series coming to a close this way and then having it blown out of the way with a story about COVID.
Well, you know, the thing about what happened with him is, and this is where you, maybe you don't include human nature, was it the right thing to do? Absolutely not. I can see how people might be outraged, whatever word you want to use, but I can also see how Justin Turner sitting in that clubhouse and his teammates, even knowing that information, are going to say, we want him to celebrate with us because it's in the moment. Not defending it, just saying, I understand why it happened, and now there's really nothing you can do about it except for hope that other people don't get sick.
Right. Well, that and, you know, the news this afternoon is that MLB is launching an investigation, which, I mean, we all know what happened. We saw what happened. So I don't think what they're trying to figure out is what happened with Justin Turner. We know what happened. He ignored requests to self-isolate. He went out on the field. We all know that. What we don't know yet is what the ramifications for this are going to be. You know, if you remember, Mark, when the Marlins and Cardinals had wrapped up or were wrapping up their own outbreaks, MLB and the Players Association had a stricter set of guidelines put into place that gave MLB the power to basically suspend anybody for the rest of 2020 for flagrantly violating the protocols. Well, 2020 is over. So what we don't know is if any of that could extend into 2021, and I guess that's probably at the heart of MLB's investigation.
So you have Benji Molina on tonight at 6:30, if I'm not mistaken, right? You talk to him about some of these things.
I think so. I think we're waiting for confirmation, but it's likely.
I think I might just confirm it. I got confirmation ahead of you
because Ben
sent me a text. So we're going to go with that.
Nice.
But let you know, there's I don't often read the comment boards and stuff like that, but every once in a while with some of the Cardinals stuff, I do. And I was reading Ben Fredrickson's chat earlier today. Look, there's frustration because of the Randy Arozarena stuff. I get it. I think we all get it right now. There's frustration because we don't have Pop in the middle of the order.
Right.
I saw some power rankings, you know, the way too early power rankings for next season, and I think the Cardinals were at like number 10 or 11. You're a Cardinals fan. You look at that and you say, wait a second, that's not the St. Louis Cardinals. But, you know, you said something a few minutes ago, which is interesting too, and I think people need to keep this in mind. It had been since 1988 that the Dodgers had won the World Series, right?
Yep.
And there's only three managers in the card. This is Walter Alston, Tommy Lasorda, and now Dave Roberts. But look, they were chasing rings for how long? They've been chasing rings. They've been spending money.
Yeah.
Didn't work. So I get where people want to go. And yeah, there's no doubt that the Cardinals need help, and we know where it is. But I also don't think that the Cardinals are that far off from being a decent competitive team. Do you?
No, I mean, look, they were in the playoffs
made
this
the
year.
Playoffs the last 2 years.
Yeah, they're in the playoffs this year. They won the division last year. They were within a game or two of the playoffs the previous 2 years. The previous 3 years. So they're always going to be in it, right? I mean, since the DeWitt Group took over in the mid '90s, I think they've had three losing seasons. I mean, we're talking three losing seasons in 25 years. So, you know, they're going to be good. And we know that they're a high-end pitching team. They proved that despite all of the problems with COVID. We know that they're an elite defensive team. And by the way, they resemble Tampa Bay quite a bit, who is also a great defensive team with outstanding pitching and also had problems in the lineup. You know, if the Cardinals can get themselves toward the middle of the pack offensively, well, then they're going to be a team that we can talk about going deep. Hell, they went to the NLCS a year ago. And none of that's, by the way, to defend any of the team's shortcomings. I mean, you know, the job is not
no,
to just come
but
close.
I get that.
But yeah, this is not like this is not a rebuild. Right? You're not light years away. If you win three or four more games, you know, compared to what your win total would have been throughout the regular season, you're a lock in the playoffs. And nobody else in the division, Mark, and this is what we have to keep into context. Nobody else in the division is about to start throwing money around and blow it out. I mean, the Cubs are going to cut money. They're in big trouble with some of their off-the-field investments costing them money in the middle of all this pandemic. The Brewers aren't going forward. The Pirates are in a rebuild. The Reds are losing Trevor Bauer. I mean, it's not like the rest of the division is going to run away from you.
Yeah, so now I got the, you know, we're talking here, and I get these Yankees fans that are texting me. Oh, yeah, they're competitive. Yeah, exactly. So they're competitive. They're competitive in their own division and nowhere else. Meantime, I'm looking at the decade that just closed out, and I don't see the Yankees on there. I'm looking. I can't find the Yankees on there at all winning a World Series. And I don't see a lot of repeats except for, I mean, we know that the Giants seem to have like a World Series year and then
a terrible year.
And they, but that stretch has kind of come to an end as well. So, I think winning a World Series, and we know this probably better than anyone else here in St. Louis, you got to have a little magic that comes along with it, too. You know, they call it, what is it called sometimes in hockey? Puck luck, right? I don't know what the equivalent would be, but a lot of things have to come together. Sometimes you can have all the talent in the world, and the clubhouse dynamics aren't right. So I get worried where there's over-criticism of the front office at, down at Busch Stadium, just because it's not like we're not trying to compete and win World Series. I think we are.
Look, it's always fair to criticize moves that don't work, but at the same time, you've got to talk about the moves that did work and the things that put you in place. So, yeah, look, at this point, the Randy Arozarena trade is a loss. We're 3 months into a trade that's going to be evaluated over 5, 6, 7 years, right? I mean, we have to find out how long Arozarena keeps it up. What is Matthew Liberatore, the prospect that they got? Is he a top of the rotation guy? Is he a relief pitcher? Like, we'll know the final score down the road. But I mean, I think that there are valid complaints, but I also think that you got to take into account what your team is year in and year out. How many franchises have gone this long? I mean, the Cardinals' last losing season was 99. No, I'm sorry, 2007. So it was right after the World Series,
but
was
still,
their last one.
That's an incredible run. You had 4 World Series victories within a 10-year stretch, too. Anyway, everyone needs to chill. We're going to be fine. I think we're going to get some good news eventually here in the offseason, and we'll find out what Mo says at 4:30. But Kevin, I got to go.
All right, buddy.
Be good. We have a lot to say, and we'll do it at 4:15. Kevin Wheeler with us this afternoon, 3:17 at KMOX. I will tell you that I took a step out of my studio here at home at the top of the hour. I'm not sure if Carol did the story about this Miles Taylor guy who has now been outed, or he's confessed that he's the anonymous person that wrote the op-ed, the senior administration official for the New York Times in 2018. He's got a book out now. He was not a senior administration official, and there is a bit of consensus this afternoon from some of us that no matter how you view this guy, Miles Taylor, that's a pretty big stretch and misleading. Not that this is shocking for the New York Times to label him as a senior administration official for that op-ed, because he was in no way, shape, or form a senior administration official. So there's more credibility on the line. And we do these podcasts, and they're awesome. PNC C-Speak, you can find them online at kmox.com/C-Speak. And I did one last week with Amanda Gotti, who's with PNC Bank. PNC is the fine sponsor of that segment. And she always tells me things that are kind of interesting about what they're watching in the financial market. She is the managing director, chief investment strategist with PNC Financial Services Group. Hey, Amanda, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. So I want to kind of go over some of the, some of the markers that you sort of look at when it comes to gauging maybe a forecast for the election, guiding investors through this, because the one thing that jumped out at me is that you don't look at polls at all, right?
No, we typically throw the polls right out of the equation. Historically speaking, the methodology used around polling can be a little bit spotty and flawed in some cases. And in more recent times, we found that even when you are collecting the data, you don't necessarily get the answers that, voters are likely to choose on election day. There's been some hesitation in terms of responses on polling. So we really don't focus too much on polling. The things that matter to us, and I should say there is no perfect predictor, but the things that do matter to us in trying to gauge potential election outcomes are usually betting odds, a series of economic data, Q2 GDP, real disposable income per capita, and then certainly monthly payrolls, as well as, believe it or not, the performance of the S&P 500 itself. And so this collection of indicators does try to give us a pretty good gauge on how things are likely to play out. But as this year has been really unprecedented, all of these indicators have kind of been all over the map over these last few months, as you might imagine.
So why the S&P, and what does that tell us right now?
Well, so it's funny that you ask about that one in particular, because when we did the podcast, this indicator was telling a very different story. And so with the sell-off in the market that we've had over the last couple of days, this indicator is flashing in a very different direction. Historically speaking, in the 3 months leading up to a presidential election, if the S&P 500 total return performance is in positive territory, that usually means the party that's currently in power is likely to stay in power. And in fact, going all the way back to 1928, there were only three times where the S&P 500 actually got the outcome of the election wrong. It was in 1956, 68, and then 80, I believe. And so based on kind of where we find ourselves today at the close of the market today, we are indeed ever so slightly in negative territory. And so by this measure alone, it actually is suggesting that there should be a change in control, that is, that Biden should be the winner of this election cycle.
But you would also, and I think you sort of alluded to this, that with all those factors that you're looking at, and you kind of look back even in more recent history to 1980, I know that was a long time ago, but that was certainly in a lot of our lifetimes. And that was a bizarre, I think to a certain extent, a strange set of circumstances too, with the hostage crisis and the recession and the interest rates and all those things. So if there's going to be something that maybe throws off the typical factors and indicators, this would probably be the year.
I would say so. Just given the list of headwinds and challenges that we've faced over the course of this year, definitely is the potential for this one to be the fourth time. Not to say that's necessarily the case, but if it was going to get it wrong, this certainly would be a year to potentially get it wrong. What a long, strange trip it has been. We kind of joke about that a little bit, that it feels like we've packed, you know, seven dog years into 1 year, and 2020 is not even over yet. So.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. Now, I only got 60 seconds. I don't know if you can do this in 60 seconds, but when it comes to a Democratic president or a Republican president administration, the return to investors is typically, because Democrats typically, well, I know when Barack Obama was in office, the market was good. Do you guys gauge that?
Well, I would say at the end of the day, it's less about who occupies the White House and more about the overall makeup of the House and the Senate. And so the thing that we're kind of worried about the most from a market and an investment perspective is that Democratic sweep scenario. You know, the market hates uncertainty, but it does very much like the checks and balances that come with a divided government. And so to the extent that we see a full-on Dem sweep play out here, I think in the short run, that could give the market some fits and starts around volatility.
I love the information. And by the way, there's a great C-Speak we did last week, kmox.com/C-Speak. Amanda, thank you so much for coming on here. And maybe we'll know something in the next few months.
I hope maybe. So. Thank you so much.
All right. I hope it's next week. I hope we know something, but I'm not confident about that. 328 at the Voice of St. Louis.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Phil Kogan is back with us this afternoon, a couple of weeks after the Amazing Race started. It's been on now two episodes, a third episode tonight. However, Phil, can you confirm, did I hear there's a bit of a time flip here for tonight's episode?
Yes, so we're going to be on at 8 o'clock tonight. We have been on at 9. We're coming back to 8 o'clock tonight, and that'll be followed by the Big Brother finale.
So that is 7 o'clock here in the Midwest. I'm all discombobulated because I was just out west in Vegas for a couple of days, and it's weird for me. You know, you're a West Coaster, but to get up in the morning and watch football at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, I kind of like it, but it throws you off. Now, before we get to the race and everything that's going on with this season, let me ask you this question. I've now been on an airplane twice since all this started, once in August and once just a couple of days ago. Has Phil Kogan, a guy that has now traveled, and I think I could confirm this with you, more than 1 million miles around the globe, have you been on an airplane since this all started?
So let's remember that 1 million miles around the world you're talking about, that's just my travel on Amazing Race.
Right, so that's true.
Many, many more millions of miles. But yes, I have. I can confirm with you that I have not been within 10 miles of a plane since the end of February.
That's so weird. You know, I was at McCarran checking in a couple of nights ago. It was, you know, there were people in Vegas, but it was dead. It's still kind of sad to see how travel is, you know, just not coming back. All right, so I didn't mean to steal thunder there, but is it true that now the race has reached this milestone of 1 million miles around the globe?
Yes, it is. And I don't know if you understand just how far that is, but to put that in perspective, I believe it's 233,000 miles to the moon. So we've been to the moon and back twice, essentially.
That's a lot of travel. And, you know, the thing that never makes the show that I don't know if I've ever asked you about, how many travel delays? We all have travel delays. I had one a couple of nights ago. So you can't tell me that every time contestants get on a plane or you get on a plane or, you know, producers get on planes, that there's not sometimes long delays when you're doing this show, are there?
Constantly. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Amazing Races. It's dealing with real world challenges. So all the challenges that you've faced before with security lines and immigration and delayed planes and sometimes bad airline food and bad weather and all of that, we are dealing with all of that. This is not some kind of movie. This is the real life we're working in.
All right, let's talk about some of these competitors, because you have several athletes, like professional athletes, and I'm very familiar because I'm an NFL guy with D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnidge, two former Carolina Panthers that are on this season, competing pretty well so far, but there are Olympians and pro volleyball players as well this season, Phil Kogan.
Yeah, so Gary and D'Angelo, hyper-competitive. They got off to a bit of a rocky start, but, you know, they've managed to get their, you know, pick up their game. But Riley and Madison, pro volleyball players, they're two brothers that have these very impressive beards. I only wish I could grow a beard like that. I don't think it's ever going to happen now at my age. But they've got those distinctive beards, very, very competitive, tall, lanky, you know, refined athletes. And then in Jerry and Frank, Jerry used to play in the NBA. It's a father-son team. And he's, you know, very impressive athlete in his day. He's now out with his son. His son would love to be able to follow in his footsteps and prove to his dad that he's as good as his dad was. Great dynamic. I love the two of them with Jerry and Frank. And then we have Kelly and LaVon. Now, Kelly and LaVon, both former Olympic hurdlers and Olympic medalists. Very impressive. Short bursts, you know, I don't know if you've ever done hurdles, but it's a tough race to try to coordinate moving very, very quickly while you're jumping over hurdles. They are not just amazing athletes, but also just amazing women. And, you know, if there's a foot race at any point on this race there, they obviously will do well. Unfortunately, have you seen the show? Have you been watching the show?
I have. We don't want spoilers, yeah. So maybe that's an important thing not to. By the way, you know me. You've ridden bikes with me. Do you think that I could ever hurdle over a hurdle, Phil?
I do. I do think you're a very capable young man. When I say young man, only because I believe you're younger than me.
But no, I'm not.
I do think you're. Are you not younger than me?
I've got you by 3 years, I think. 55. Didn't you? You just turned 50, didn't you?
No, I'm 53. But
okay,
I think you just
right.
look younger than me. Maybe I've just had too many years out in the sun, and I've got, you know, too much skin damage. I'm looking
that
more like Clint Eastwood in High Noon right now, kind of, or High Plains Drifter kind of a look going on, this
right.
whole COVID thing. But, I actually think you'd be very, very capable. I can see you've got natural athletic abilities. It's all good. You've been watching the show for so long, Mark.
Well, we love the show. And, you know, one of the things now that's fun after becoming a father again a few years ago is, and this is why I'm glad you moved it up to 7, because it's tougher to do this. My daughter's bedtime is like 8:30 hard. But we like to watch this with her. You know, this is a big family show. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Huge family show. And that's the thing I love hearing from people is just they talk about sitting down with their grandkids or you know, the multiple generations that sit down, multi-generational audience that we get is great. And, you know, that's hard to do. This, a lot of times, you know, families are looking for something to bring them together. When I was a kid, it used to be the Sunday night movie, and it would be some family-friendly movie on a Sunday. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Means that I could not control there, Mark. I'm totally fine, Mark. I just want you to know I'm in quarantine. I'm in absolute lockdown, so I'm not worried about getting sick.
I hope so.
We're getting ready to shoot season two of Tough as Nails. So I've had to go into like the red zone, what they call the red zone, and I'm locked down right now. I can't leave the house. Every Sunday night, you know, was the film night, and everybody would sit down, and there would be, you know, Mary Poppins or The Sound of Music or, you know, some fun family film.
All right, so you kind of led me into my final question here. You talked about Tough as Nails. We had a great St. Louis participant, Lee Marshall. I came out for those auditions last year when you came through St. Louis. It was the first stop. So and by the way, I hope CBS is appreciative of the fact that you're sort of holding this network together right now, right? Because this was a show, The Amazing Race was supposed to be on. I'm sure you love that I said this was supposed to be on this season in the spring. They delayed it. You had Tough as Nails over the summer, so they depend on you. I think you got some, you know, strength in negotiating right now.
Well, you've always been good at the hyperbole, but thank you, Mark. Look, I'm just happy to be working and very excited about a season two of Tough as Nails. It's very difficult to get a show to go from a season one to a season two pickup because you know season one is always fraught with challenges, and you're guessing, doing a lot of guessing about what you think is going to work. Thankfully, the show did work. People really gravitated towards the cast that we had. You mentioned Roofer Lee. Roofer Lee, one of our more popular contestants, he came out that day at St. Louis on a nice cold morning and stepped up on the stage, and we knew we had someone special in him. We just finished the casting for the season two yesterday. So we have our finalists, and we will be going into production next week. We're shooting in and around the LA area again. It's going to be challenging, of course, with COVID compliances, but we will be going into production. This show really works because of the great characters and the hardest working men and women in America. Our essential workers will be celebrated on season two of Tough as Nails, and expect to see that in the early part of 2021 on CBS.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, everyone's got to get creative. I had my my buddy, you know, I know George Gray from over at The Price is Right, and they had a primetime special last night, and they had to do it without people in the audience. So the producers came up with ways where there's a will, there's a way. You got to do it pushing forward. I don't know how you do The Amazing Race without, you know, having lockdowns. I don't think that's going to be possible, but we'll look forward to hearing what the plans are in the future. Phil, it's great to have you on. I hope you're doing well, and we'll chat soon.
Yeah, I hope we do, too. And listen, if you're going to start hurdling, which it sounds like, you know, you're inspired to do.
Likely,
just around the house probably or in the backyard. Just start with something low first, okay? We don't want any pulled hamstrings at 55 years old.
I'll send you the video. It'll go viral. Phil Kogan, The Amazing Race. You can see it tonight, CBS, 7 o'clock. They've moved up the time before Big Brother. Phil, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you.
And he's too kind to me because he knows I'm not a great athlete, but we've ridden bikes together. He's an amazing athlete, that guy. I'll tell you what, he rode 100 miles in California, Bike MS California, on a fixed-gear bicycle. I tell people that. For those of you who ride bikes, you know how hard that would have been. 3:46, Cut of the Day is coming up next.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio Cut of the Day.
Well, on Capitol Hill today, leaders of big tech, Google, Facebook, Twitter, testified before the Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. That means St. Louis native Jack Dorsey looking rather homeless. Marsha Dorsey, I don't know what to... He did look homeless. He really did. And Ted Cruz wanted to ask some questions of Jack Dorsey about Twitter censoring the New York Post story about Hunter Biden.
Mr. Dorsey, who the hell elected you and put you in charge of what the media are allowed to report and what the American people are allowed to hear? And why do you persist in behaving as a Democratic super PAC, silencing views to the contrary of your political beliefs?
Well, we're not doing that. And this is why I opened this hearing with calls for more transparency. We realize we need to earn trust more. We realize that more accountability is needed to show our intentions and to show the outcomes.
Thank you, Senator.
So I hear the concerns and acknowledge them, but we want to fix it with more transparency.
Well, the answers, though, were very confusing. So why this is important, the reasons before this committee is for more than two decades, internet companies have been shielded from liability of, you know, what their users post by a particular section of the Communications Decency Act. Well, that's up for grabs right now. They're going to talk about whether to continue that. Colorado Senator Cory Gardner asked Jack Dorsey about flagging tweets.
It's strange to me that you've flagged the tweets from the president, but haven't hidden the Ayatollah's tweets on Holocaust denial or calls to wipe Israel off the map. Does Twitter maintain a formal list of certain accounts that you actively monitor for misinformation?
No, and we don't have a policy against misinformation. We have a policy against misinformation in three categories, which are manipulated media, public health, specifically COVID, and civic integrity, election interference, and voter suppression.
In that's the answer, and I don't think that answer is going to be very acceptable to a lot of people. So in other words, you can put as much information out there as you want. And by the way, during this hearing today, you had the official Twitter account of the Ayatollah, you know, in Iran, tweeting about what they were saying, which is kind of stunning. So you can lie about the Holocaust. You can do all these things out there. You're not going to get flagged by Twitter. But if you cross over into politics and it's somewhat questionable and unverifiable, especially on one side, we're going to shut you down. That's what they've done at Twitter. So I think this went all that well for Jack in particular today on Capitol Hill. 356. That's your audio cut, or as the case may be, cuts of the day. Total Information PM is coming up.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.